The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. The other day one of our congregation members died, very peacefully at the age of 79 after a good long life. She'd had a lot of illness, but had lived a good full life. And we were visiting her and sitting with her, and then when she died, we went up to prepare the body and so on. And the last part of her life was a constant training in letting go. She had to let go of being able to do things, she had to be able to let go of independence. She had cancer the last few years, and she kept giving things away. You know, when she left behind Berkeley to come up to live in Mount Shasta, to come to the Abbey, and she gave away a huge lot of books. She was a scholar, piles of books, and people came and got books, and she was so happy to see them take away these piles of books that she didn't need anymore. And then when she was up here, she'd have these little giveaways of stuff. And so by the time it was clear that she could no longer live independently, she didn't have a whole lot of stuff left. But her great love was her house. She had this lovely little house. She wanted to be able to stay there till she died. Well, actually, it became clear that the last couple of months of her life, she couldn't really take care of herself. And so she left her little house and went up to the hospice place in Wairika. And this is a big wrench for her. But after a week or two, she got used to it and really liked it. She was really happy she was there. She was able to relinquish her house, her stuff, her independence, all the things she had clutched on to, you know, clung on to dearly, which we can completely sympathize with. And she was fine. It went fine. She was peaceful, was there for 2 months, then she died peacefully. Which is lovely, because you think, you know, you have these fears. What about this? What about that? What if she runs out of money? You know, it was all right. It all worked out okay. And the things we fear are often the things that don't happen. Something else happens, but that's another matter. But when she was dying, I think it might have been the day she died. We were sitting with her, and she'd already died, I don't remember. But I was looking at her, and it was so clear to me that how foolish it is to do self-seeking things. In looking at the news, people, you know, assassinating somebody or grabbing something or harming other people for the sake of a little benefit. You think, here's Anna lying here. What good does that kind of stuff do a person? When if they're lucky, this is how they'll end up. If they're lucky, you know. What use is it to do those things? You know, every now and then you just sort of think, that's really dumb. You know? Greed, hatred, and all that. Easy to say, but hard to relinquish, because of course we don't sit all the time by somebody who's dying, and we don't think about it all the time, and it's just as well we don't, or we'd be pretty morbid. Dogen says, you know, the kingdom of death must be entered by oneself alone, with nothing for company but our own good and bad karma. You can't take all this stuff with you when you go. You can't take your... Don't look for assistance from kings, statesmen, relatives, wealth and treasure, family, you know, as Dogen says. All we have is what we've got. Our own good and bad karma, for better or worse. As a community, we've been actually talking about death lately, somewhat coincidentally. Because often people, well, not just because, but often people ask us, what happens when we die? Well, in a word, you don't rightly know. Which is comforting, actually, in a way. Somebody asked the Dalai Lama, and he said, I don't really know. We think, oh, okay, we're not just dumb. Actually, nobody actually completely knows what happens when you die. You have glimpses of things, as, you know, people see things, they have experiences of near death and come back, but they haven't died. They've almost died. Or maybe they've died for a moment and come back. You don't really quite know, you know. This is the Bardo talked about. There's the six worlds of rebirth. There's all kinds of teachings on death. But when it comes down to it, not having died in the recent past that we can remember, we don't rightly know. But this is okay. We don't have to worry. There's one thing that does seem to happen to everybody. They are confronted with a great light, the Dharmakaya, Buddha nature, the unborn, God, whatever you want to call it. There is something that appears to them at the moment of death. This would appear to be so. And people may respond in different ways. And this is where our training comes in. Reverend Master Jiyu used to say, when the time comes to die, go straight to the unborn, to Buddha nature. Don't judge yourself. This is the main thing. People tend to judge themselves as unworthy. Oh, I've done awful things. Oh, I'm not a good person. I'm separate. I can't possibly just go to God. It can't be that simple. Look at all the stuff I've done. Look at my karma. What about the, you know? And in fact, he would say, just go straight for it. And other people say this too. It's self-judgment that causes us, or causes people to turn away, and eventually brings about rebirth. We don't have to judge ourselves, no matter what a person may have done. And people do change at the moment of death sometimes. See that what they have done, in the way they've lived their life, the things they've clung on to, are not worth clinging on to. Reverend Master had this past life of a Tartar who had been, his great joy had been battles, slicing the horses of his opponents, poor horses, and winning battles. And as he's being dragged into the mud, and I think Reverend Master Jisha talked about this, he was drowning in the mud and his friend left him. And he thought, what use was that? You know, what a waste to spend your life doing these silly things. And what I am doing now is drowning in the mud and no one helps me. What good is that? And that thought conditioned something, it helped him later on, that this was not a good way to go. People ask about the Bardo. The Tibetans talk about the Bardo. In most of the Mahayana traditions, it would seem, there is talk of the things that can happen after death. And people worry about this. They think, oh my God, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be just one horrible thing after another. What am I going to do? Or it's going to be just frightening. And, you know. But actually, it would appear, we don't know, that the Bardo is for those who don't know how to sit still in the midst of things that arise, who don't know how to meditate, who don't know how to just practice faith. And even then, there's always compassion. There's always a chance to change, to turn around, to do better. It's not like a pass-fail exam. You get your last moment, okay, am I going to be one of the good guys, go right to God? Am I going to be one of the bad guys and go back and end up as an animal or a hungry ghost or something? I don't think it's like that. I think it's much kinder and nicer and more forgiving than that. And why even talk about this, actually? You think, well, why talk about what happens when we die, when we don't rightly know? It's mostly speculation. Why worry? Well, people do worry. And in fact, our life is partly a preparation for death, but it's also a preparation for life. It's not different. It's not like, you know, pie in the sky when you die. We're just miserable here now and trying to be good, and then everything will be nice later. What we do during our life helps us in life and in death, I believe. Our preparation, our training, is a preparation both for life and for death. The things that get away in the way when we die, self-judgment and so on, also tend to get in the way when we're alive. Our inadequacy, our mistakes, our, you know, judging of ourselves, our thinking we're separate, I'm a separate person, unworthy, you know. the inadequacy that arises for many people, the feeling of unworthiness, that God won't want me. That's what it comes down to. God doesn't want me. As Buddhists, we learn to meditate with all our various states of mind and not to completely believe them, because it's so convincing, that thought, I've done bad things, or I'm not good enough, or I'm sullied, or I don't have Buddha nature, got passed out but I missed it, you know. But all the various states of mind, all the things that happen to us, as Buddhists, we do our best to sit still with them all, to accept them, and not to be completely pulled into them, not to completely believe them, not to totally believe that feeling of I'm not good enough, or I'm somehow separate and different. And this sitting still with all the things that arise during life helps us both in life and when we come to die. Our little fears and our little moments of anxiety, our little irritations and are upset when someone challenges our opinions, all these little moments of possible unstillness, they're a great opportunity to sit still and let them come and go, then to see their empty nature, to see that if my little self is challenged, it's okay. If somebody thinks ill of me, it's not the end of the world. Or if I'm blamed for something I didn't do, or if I blame myself for something, all that. It's just states of mind, and they come and go. Not to completely believe in them. So when we sit still with a little worry, a little anxiety, we're practicing sitting still in the face of mortal illness and death. It's all the same thing. It's just a little dry run. You know, we have these little dry runs of anxiety and fear and the nameless dread in the middle of the night and all that. It's actually good practice. And when we let go of our view about how things should be done, it's like a little death, you know. A little bit of self is dying. Somebody the other day said, every day we have 1,000 little deaths of self. We had this little talk about the extinction of self. Somebody said, well, if the self is gone when you die, that kind of worries me, you know. And somebody else said, well, when you're told to chop carrots a different way, it's the same thing. And the funny thing of this is I had thought, well, the extinction of self, great, yeah, I'm all for it. Chopping carrots? I know how to chop carrots, you know. And I could see this little self pop up with views, I know how to chop carrots, or whatever it might be. But it's so funny, you sort of think, you know, the big thing, oh, this is great, it's just fine. But then something little like chopping carrots or, you know, you realize, there's a self there, clinging on grimly to these little ways of doing things. It's very salutary. Self-judgment, the greatest obstacle in training, whether in life or in death, when we're judging ourselves, feeling separate, feeling different, that other people know how to meditate and I don't. Other people have Buddha nature and I somehow missed it. Other people can do things and I can't, or I'm just somehow not cutting it, or God doesn't want me, as I said. And often this is comparing ourselves with other people. If we just were the only one, if I was alone in a desert island, would I be comparing myself with other people? Probably not. I'd just be trying to survive, you know. Would I be maybe Robinson Crusoe or somebody? But it'd be hard put to it to find a way of feeling inadequate on a desert island, if you're thinking about it. You just actually got to survive. Cats don't feel inadequate. I've never seen a cat looking inadequate at all. Perfectly self-sufficient. Dogs, I don't know, but cats? No way. The Buddha said, comparing oneself with others. To feel inferior to others, to feel superior to others, or even to feel equal to others, all are deluded. Whether we feel better, worse, or just the same, it's all deluded. Because any comparison of oneself with others is based on the idea of a separate self. I'm better than them, I'm worse than them, I'm equal to them. If we feel worse than people, we sometimes try to compensate by saying, well, at least I'm good at this, I'm better than anybody at this thing, you know. But even thinking we're just the same as everybody, really, is still deluded. The habits of mind that we cultivate in life, whether consciously or unconsciously, will be with us as we die. The habit energy, the karmic energy of the habits of mind, whether we're habitually irritable, habitually fearful, habitually feeling unworthy, these are the things we need to train with now, because we'll carry them on to the next time around, or somebody will, whether it's us or not, and that's another matter. It's our job now to deal with our habitual states of mind as they arise. That anxiety in the middle of the night, or that little puffy self that says, I know how to chop carrots, you know. To see these things and to relinquish our idea of ourself, me as a separate self that knows how to do things, or that doesn't know how to do anything. All these things that habitually come up in our mind, the habitual thing our mind turns to see that and to see its empty nature. Doesn't mean it just goes away, but we can see through it. If we continually judge ourselves as unworthy, we are more likely to turn away from the great Dharmakaya, to compare ourselves with it and feel unworthy. Yeah. It doesn't want me. I'm not worthy. I'm not part of it. Yeah. And as I said, I don't think when we die it's a pass-fail exam. I think it's much looser and more kind than that, more forgiving and compassionate. But it would seem that the habit energy of mind that we have cultivated tends to condition what we do or what we choose to do. And I say tends because anyone can turn around, no matter what they may have done or what they may think of themselves, they can turn around. Nobody is damned in that sense. We damn ourselves, if you want to put it that way, but we don't have to. And I don't think we have to worry that, oh my God, am I going to blow it at the moment of death and say, no, I'm unworthy and fall into hell. I don't think it's quite that sharp, as I said. There's always opportunities to turn around. Even within this rebirth, there's still that opportunity to cleanse karma and do better. It goes on and on. It's not like heaven and hell forever. It's a constant thing. However, if we train ourselves now, if we work on it now, to relinquish our self-judgment and judgment of others just as much, because that's the same thing, then we're much more likely to allow ourselves to just relinquish all that stuff, to let go and become part of Buddha nature. Both in life and in death, actually, is not different, not separate. As we train ourselves now, it helps us, both now and in the future, through death and rebirth or whatever comes our way. Keeping to the precepts, cleansing our karma, doing our best. And, of course, if we keep to the precepts as best we can, do our best to live in harmony with Buddha nature, then there's a lot less harm done. We suffer a lot less. Others suffer a lot less. There's a lot less karma for somebody else to have to deal with when you die. And a lot less likelihood of self-judgment. I did these awful things, I didn't keep to the precepts, I was not a good person. The more we train ourselves now, the better it is for everybody. Samantabhadra, universal goodness. Samantabhadra continually flows everywhere within the universe, completely filling everything, says the scripture. Completely filling everything, everywhere within the universe, filling everything, including us. Samantabhadra, universal goodness, flows through us, through our bodies, our minds, our thoughts, our actions, all our states of mind, all that. Anxiety, fear, worry, miserable little petty thoughts, all of that. All of it is permeated by universal goodness, by Samantabhadra. This is very helpful. Universal goodness flows through everything. And our judgment is completely irrelevant, actually. It's so much bigger than our little thoughts or our little judgments that, in a sense, if we really could see it completely, it would just blow it all out of the water. We're all part of the whole universe, not separate in any way, no matter what we may think. We're all made of the same stuff as everybody else, and everything else. That lovely analogy of waves on the sea. This is my favorite analogy of the self. We're like a wave on the sea. We arise, we travel along, and we pass away, go back into the sea. We're not separate. The wave is not up here somewhere. The wave is just part of the sea. It's so apparent. You can see it, but actually, it's just part of the sea. It's not a thing. It's just an impulse. And maybe that's all we are, just a kind of karmic impulse trying to find its way back to stillness in the ocean. We arise, travel through our lives, pass away. Maybe that's all we are, just a karmic impulse somehow. Completely part of the sea, we're completely part of that ocean of Buddha nature. And no wave is better than any other wave, or worse than any other wave. We're just waves. I'm a little wave, I'm a big wave, who cares? We're just part of the sea. Which is very nice. We can actually just try to, when it comes up as I'm better or worse, or I'm bad or I'm good, or I'm worthy or unworthy, or what, any of that stuff. Or I'm an angry person, or I'm a mean person, I'm a nice person, I'm a good person, I'm a respectable person. It's all just a wave trying to be a wave. Respectable wave or a good wave or a bad wave is ridiculous when you think about it. However, we forget this. But as we try to live by the precepts and do our meditation, to relinquish our selfishness and do our best, we're more likely to see our wave nature and to live by that, to just do our best, not living for me and my stuff. Since we just dissolve back into the sea anyway, why fuss with all that too much? To help each other, to help other beings, not to see that not to think of ourselves as being separate, but to see that we're really all just part of that sea. And it's a sea of suffering as well as the ocean of Buddha nature. There is the misery that comes to all beings, fear, pain, loss, grief, and all that. But we can do our best to help ourselves and other beings just to live this life with kindness and compassion and not thinking I'm a separate little me and I've got to have my stuff, but to help other beings and to help ourselves because it's not different. Arise, abide, pass away. That's what we do. And since this is so, we don't need to be afraid in life or in death. What's to fear? We go back to the sea, And yes, things happen. Fear arises, pain arises, sorrow arises. But when it comes, we just do our best to sit still with it, to accept it, to let it all come and go, and to practice faith in the midst of all that, trusting that indeed we are part of that unborn Buddha nature. Nothing separate, nothing different. We don't have to cling on desperately to life. We don't have to seek death. It all just comes and goes. Zen is eternal life. Reverend Master called her first book, Zen is Eternal Life. What does that mean? It doesn't mean an enduring self that goes on forever and ever. It means that we're all part of that unborn Buddha nature, part of that great sea. And I'm going to do a little bit of how to grow lotus blossom towards the end, when Reverend Master's talking about life and death. Nothing is born, nothing dies. We shape our fears from emptiness, and unto emptiness they must return. The only seemingly real emptiness is fear. The Lord enfolds emptiness and is not empty, nor is not not empty. Within the Lord all senses, form, thought, all things cease and nothing ceases. There are neither old age nor death, and there is no ceasing of old age and death as the world understands them. One undertakes meditation when one is young, so as to make some sense out of life or to escape death. The Lord promises us small presents so that he may give us our true inheritance. Life and death, body and mind, fall away naturally, for they no longer apply. A few days ago there was the return of my illness. A month ago it would have mattered. Now it is as it should be. There is no extinction of old age and death. If life comes, there is only life. If death comes, there is only death. All acceptance is the key that unlocks the gateless gate. Within this place there is no suffering, no coming, no going, no ceasing, no way. There is only endless training, appearing here, disappearing there, going in and out, always becoming Buddha. Nicely put. I don't think I can do better than that. That's our talk for the day. Thank you.